managed to trip up the stairs at the Women of Influence Award last year, twice. So I'm not very good at entrances. What an extraordinary speech. I've been asked to give some reflections on Andrew's talk, limited to 10 minutes, which most people know I'm not very good at, but I will endeavour to do so. Distinguished guests, Andrew McKenzie, Richard, thank you for that always meaningful welcome to country. And also I'd like to acknowledge my brother Ben White as well, sitting next to me today. Before I begin, I just wanted to acknowledge also Mick Dodson sitting here. Of course, his very important work as Social Justice Commissioner inspired me as a young law student, Aboriginal law student, and certainly set the groundwork for addressing unfinished business. As Tom, I'm so glad I just saw you in my line of sight, as has Tom Calmer's work as Social Justice Commissioner, so I acknowledge both of them. I'm told that there are over 40 traditional owners present here who work with BHP, and I want to acknowledge them. And also, there are many signatories to the Uluru Statement from the Heart who are here as well, which is really exciting to see and be reunited with them. Dave Collard in particular, I don't know where he is, but shout out Sally Scales from APY Lands, there she is with Walter, and also my own cobble cobble cousin, Merv Riley, who's also a Barada Barna TO, who works with BHP, he's here as well. And finally, I'd like to acknowledge Fred Chaney, who I've been working with on this project for 8 years. And also just a shout out to my other Aboriginal brothers and sisters here today for this very historic statement by Andrew and BHP. This has been a very long journey. Recognition started, some say, in 1999 with John Howard and the recognition of Indigenous peoples in the preamble in the Republic referendum. Others say 2011, when Julia Gillard set up the first expert panel on the recognition of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples in the Constitution, which makes it 8 years, the recognition project here in Australia. We've had 8 official government reports in 8 years. And now the time has come to wrap this thing up as a nation. It was late in 2015 when Malcolm Turnbull constituted a new referendum council to try and bring this process to a conclusion. He had heard that many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people would not be happy with a minimalist or symbolic form of recognition. What they wanted was something concrete, something substantive, something that would politically empower our people to find the solutions to their problems. And that is what the dialogues, the 13 dialogues that we ran across Australia in 2015 and 2016 did. The First Nations dialogues that culminated in the National First Nations Constitutional Convention at Uluru, at Mutujulu, at the foot of the rock, where we issued the Uluru Statement from the Heart. The dialogues were difficult. They were not easy for any of us. We had to build in an entire extra day so that people could ventilate the feelings that they had about voicelessness, powerlessness. As the Uluru Statement says, that is the torment of our powerlessness. The incarceration rates, the youth detention rates, the numbers of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children being removed and in out-of-home care. These are the issues that occupied the dialogues. How could we use constitutional recognition and structural reform to design a reform which would allow us to rein those problems in? Or should I say, take the reins, take control of our own business, of our own lives? I often reflected on what we were hearing at the dialogues, this palpable sense of hopelessness. And I reflected on a lot of the international literature. They call it an ethical loneliness. That is to say, when you have been abandoned by humanity as a violated person or as a member of a persecuted or oppressed group, and you have no control or power over your own life's possibilities. This ethical loneliness is a condition in which people disassociate or become dislocated to the mainstream society. It's a condition undergone by persons who have been unjustly treated, dehumanised by human beings and political structures, who emerge from that injustice only to find that the surrounding world will not listen. They will not listen, or they cannot properly hear their testimony, their claims about what they have suffered and about what is now owed to them on their terms. So this ethical loneliness is the experience of having been abandoned by humanity, compounded by the experience of not being heard. And so it's not just oppression or abandonment, but it's also the failure of just-minded people to hear well. The failure of just-minded people to hear well from those who have suffered about what recovery or reconciliation means after that injustice, what is required. And that failure haunts the sights of political transition, which we are going through, of reconciliation, of forgiveness. And that is what the Uluru Statement from the Heart is. It is First Nations from across the country saying, this is what we think recovery looks like. This is what we think reconciliation looks like. This is what we think forgiveness looks like. It was a gift to the Australian people. When we issued the statement, we decided not to present it to Malcolm Turnbull and Bill Shorten. We decided to issue it to the Australian people and present it to no one, because we didn't want the painting being hung up in Parliament House until we'd achieved the reforms. We have this thing in constitutional law known as a constitutional moment, and it's a moment when they don't come along very often and you can force through significant constitutional reform. But it almost always happens through political leadership. We decided at Mutitjulu that that political leadership in the contemporary climate of liberal democratic governance would not deliver us these reforms, but the Australian people could. And that's what's so significant about Andrew Mackenzie's speech, BHP's commitment today, Rio Tinto's commitment today. Australians stepping up and saying, we can do this. Hope against hope, we can achieve this reform. And it was hard to get the mob in the dialogues to think that we could do this too. The first thing we did was have to settle people down, and they would say to us, you guys have done this decade after decade. You've come to us and said, what do you want? It's a ticker box consultation. And after talking about all of the big issues facing each of the regions, we said to them, look, law reform is about imagination. That is what law reform is. There's a problem. You have to fix it. But you have to suspend your disbelief that the system can't change. You have to suspend your disbelief that the public institutions and public structures of Australia can't change. You must suspend your disbelief here and imagine that the world, that Australia can be a better place. That is what law reform is, imagination, suspending your disbelief. And those extraordinary people, 1,200 mob from across the country, 60% TOs, 20% our Aboriginal organisations, 20% Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander individuals, that's what they did. They ventilated on day one, and then day two and three, they knuckled down to a very difficult constitutional deliberative dialogue. We went through civics lectures and lectures on legislation and how the constitution works and how the constitution changes. And they did really hard work, and they came out with a marvellous structured reform, voice, treaty and truth. And we issued it to the Australian people, because it's only the Australian people who can change the constitution. It is us together who can change the constitution. So we avoided the ritualism, the political ritualism of listening but not hearing. And I'm so privileged to be here today to hear Andrew's statement because he's not just listening, but he's hearing. And so many Australians from all over this country have approached us in support of the Uluru Statement, but in particular, the first part of the reform, which is enshrining a voice in the Constitution. The idea of the voice is simple. We talked about how whitefella law does law. How do you compel the state to listen? How do you compel the state to hear? Well, you go to the big law, you go to the Constitution. It is the biggest law in this country. You put a law in there and you compel them to listen. You have to make them listen. That is how whitefellas do their legal system. It's called the force of law. And we just want to compel them to listen to what we have to say on the laws and policies that they pass and design that impact upon us. It's a very simple principle. And that's what the Uluru Statement is about. So I'm just going to end now by just reading the tail end of the Uluru Statement from the heart, because I think the mob at Uluru said it better. We seek constitutional reforms to empower our people and take a rightful place in our own country. When we have power over our destiny, our children will flourish. They will walk in two worlds and their culture will be a gift to their country. We call for the establishment of a First Nations voice enshrined in the Constitution. Makarrata is the culmination of our agenda, the coming together after a struggle. It captures our aspirations for a fair and truthful relationship with the people of Australia and a better future for our children based on justice and self-determination. We seek a Makarrata Commission to supervise a process of agreement making between governments and First Nations and truth telling about our history. In 1967, we were counted. In 2017, we seek to be heard. We leave base camp and start our trek across this vast country. And we invite you to walk with us in a movement of the Australian people for a better future. Thank you.